Now it's time for more of Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. Get ready for more of the best fishing information and the hottest tips on improving your angling skills. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup. Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best. Shimano. And now, Southern California's sports fishing voice, the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, and Corey Sandin.
Welcome back. Hour number two, Let's Talk Hookup, right here on the Let's Talk Hookup app, Facebook and YouTube Live. Pete Gray here, along with Rock Cod Rick Mexa. We're in the world headquarters here in San Diego Fishing Central. That is the San Diego Landings in Point Loma. We have a great guest today, a real fisherman and a scientist, Owen Snodgrass from NOAA, doing great work for us to help keep fishing good. And taking your texts now in the second hour, and a lot to talk about here on Let's Talk Hookup. Right, Rick?
Man, you're having a, you nailed it. Having a great time with Owen here this morning. Really looking forward to another full hour. And again, if you want to join us, the only way during the second hour is through the text. We have a ton of great texts already through there. But again, a full hour to be reading yours. If you want to do it, the only way to send in your text questions is through the Let's Talk Hookup app. It's a free download. As soon as you open the app, one of the first things you'll see as you scroll down is text the show. Just click that button and write your text questions in for Owen. Make sure you include your contact info with your text. Just a name and a phone number is all we need in case you win that great prize at the end of the show today. Which, again, if you didn't hear, we're giving away a full-day trip to go fishing with Captain Cameron on board the Mission Bell. Those guys have been doing such a great job, and one lucky caller or texter is going to get to go fishing and have fun on board that Mission Bell. A great prize.
Yeah, I want to mention tomorrow, great show with Captain Rob Butler from Towboat San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
Towboat U.S. San Diego. Super good guy. He's got so many great stories. Rob's been around in this industry towing boats and helping people on the water with Towboat U.S. San Diego. And it's going to be a fun show. Tomorrow morning, 7 to 9 a.m., right here on the Let's Talk Hookup app, Facebook, YouTube. And then, of course, tomorrow, full 2 hours on 97.3 The Fan. But let's find out what's biting out there, Rick.
You got it, man. It is time for our catch report, which, again, sponsored part by Gamakatsu. Hey, the guys at Dana Landing have had a great set of discounts and sales, as well as all the great tackle stores across Southern California. That Gamakatsu, so many great opportunities for the fishing we're doing, and especially when you bump into scenarios like we have right now. Obviously, we all want big sardine all the time, but when you do happen to make a trip with a little adverse bait, having small, when a small hook makes a difference from small bait, nobody does a better job than Gamakatsu. That not a circle hook in a 2 and a 4, the difference is the wire that Gamakatsu uses is a very strong wire and allows you to fish a skinnier wire hook but still maintain the strength as some of the competition that has wire gauge that's twice the size. There's nothing like Gamakatsu for live bait fishing. Check it out at your local dealer, or for more information, check Gamakatsu.com. We got him, the man, Captain Mark Wish of Pacific Edge is on the line. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Ricky, Pete, Owen. God, great show. So much good information. I love all this technical stuff.
For sure.
Really cool.
Thanks, Mark.
Oh, man. And you know that thing you were talking about, the Autolus, where they can analyze the rings to see the ocean conditions? That's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's
holy
cool,
crap.
Dude.
My God. Anyway, guys, so here we are, last days of May, and, you know, we've had some tough conditions offshore, lots of wind. In fact, they just put up gale warnings again for the outside. Definitely going to cramp our style for sure. Going to cramp mine because we were going somewhere tomorrow, but we have to make some change of plans. Starting up north, Channel Islands, you know, the fish there, you know, the fish are at the islands, but conditions have just been brutal. I mean, there's been a little signal on some good grade sea bass, plenty of them, big halibuts, a few yells, but weather's really been an issue. And you couple that with the lack of squid, just been a major handicap. But what was an interesting tidbit showed up here the other day. One of the sport boats had a nice catch of barracuda at Santa Cruz. And historically, we've seen those barracudas come up, you know, come in up north like that and then work down the coast. So hopefully that's the tip of the spear. We could definitely use that barracuda filling in, make things a little more interesting on the local scene. So we'll see what happens there. San Nicolas Island, man, weather's up big time right now. No reports from the island here at all this week, actually. Santa Barbara, it's been right on the edge of the wind, which has been a shame because there's been some pretty good fishing out there. Not as much on the sea bass here the past week or so, but tanker grade yellows, man, there's some big ones, and they're hanging around the bad neighborhoods that ridge out the backside of the island there. A lot of structure, and they're big fish, and the hook to land ratio is not so good. You got to fish that heavier tackle, guys. Been a few sea bass, but not too much here recently. At Catalina, kind of finally getting with the program a little bit better. Bass fishing at the island has been very good. Just about everywhere, you got some kelp and some structure, man. There's just a lot of big fish this year. It's been pretty fun bass fishing. And more bonita showing up. Some bigger ones moved in, mostly that 4 to 5 pound stuff, mostly up west, backside west, frontside west, like that. A few yellows mixed in with the bonita schools. There's scattered yellows just about all around the island. Squid situation, still tough, not much bait around. And right now it's full moon. And it's been kind of windy. It just makes it tough.
Yeah.
We're going tomorrow. We're going tomorrow, and I'm definitely dipping into the squid bank and taking some frozen because I'm not counting on catching much here. So, and then locally, there's been a few big sea bass around in the South Orange County coastline sector. And this goes back to last Sunday. We took a look. We did not see any sea bass sign at all. But I got to tell you, it was absolutely phenomenal calico bass fishing. They had in the receiver in Dana a mix of sardines that were on the big side and anchovies that were way, way, way on the small side. I mean, you hear about two eyes and a wiggle. This was that, but about 5% of it was hook bait. And, boy, when the wind came up in the afternoon and the sun came out and the current's going downhill perfect with 68 degree water and a tank of anchovies for chum.
Holy
that
God.
Bass fishing was game on.
Wow. So how much. Fun is that, huh?
That was fun.
We were talking about that this week at the shop, and you're right. I mean, it's a struggle in terms of having, not every chove in the tank is right for fishing on a hook. But man, if you're a guy that likes to fire an MC swim bait at a kelp line, nothing makes that kelp come alive like firing out that little mini chove. Like, it gets those things so fired up. Corey talks about it a lot too. Like when you're chumming big bait, a calico bass just physically gets full. You put two or three big sardines in a 14 inch fish, like that's it. They don't go anymore. But like there's no such thing as too much of those, little mini chove. It just gets everything so fired up, and it makes for such fun bass action.
Boy, you got that right. And it also was fun is, last time I was at CalStar, Chris forced me to take this rod. Forced me to take it. Yeah. And it's very similar to the one that your buddy Brandon has down there, 8.5 foot. He's got the medium. I got the heavy action one. And that rod with a Tranx 500 and a Tatty C in kind of this weird scrambled egg color, when those bass got all fired up, oh, my God, they were biting the iron so good.
What rod is that?
Doesn't have a name.
Well,
yet.
He wouldn't.
Oh, it doesn't have a name.
He wouldn't. It doesn't have. Yeah, all it says on it is CalStar prototype.
Oh,
so it's it's 8.5 foot. It's a really nice rod. I caught a bunch of bass on it. Mike caught some bass on it. We proclaimed it really good stuff, but I have no idea exactly what it is or
it's going to be
what,
so cool.
If anything,
John's
do
secret
it.
Weapon.
It's gonna.
We're working on a very good small light lure casting rod that will perform like a CalStar for still catching big. So when you've got to cast something like a smaller jig like Mark's talking about, or specifically like popper, stick bait, but still be able to deal with a big fish, think something like stick bait for Cabrillas in northern Baja all the way up to sub 100 pound tuna, casting lures. So a rod that's long enough at 8.5 feet that still casts well, but also has a skinny enough butt section that it fits a traditional reel seat that marries with the Tranx a little better. Because, you start getting rods that are 8.5 feet, the butt sections are usually so large that a smaller reel seat that accompanies a reel like a Tranx doesn't work. Well, John and Chris put their heads together and built what we feel is going to be a perfect weapon when it gets through its
soon
prototyping
to be named.
Phase. Yeah, soon, Soon, we hope
maybe
so.
Maybe it'll be the Mark Wish special.
I think it'll be the Brandon Bono special. He's who brought that brainchild to Chris.
Okay.
But we have one that one of our guys from the landing just came back from Cedros and put it through its paces, you know, catching stick bait yellowtail down there, and is just raving about it. Cast so good, but still has, you know, the guts to deal with a big fish. It's going to be really cool when it makes its way around.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, hey, Mark, what's of course, fishdope.com. Danny and the boys just doing a fantastic job keeping things. Things are changing fast right now, and you need to be on fishdope.com. $30 off a new membership to fishdope.com using the code HOOKUPNOW, lowercase, no space. HOOKUPNOW is your $30 code for a new membership to fishdope.com. And what's going on at Pacific Edge?
Oh, we got some fun stuff happening. So in addition to, you know, all the regular tackle and bait tank stuff, I've been kind of forced back into the squid crowder business.
Ha,
so
ha, ha.
We've been working on some what will be absolutely state-of-the-art crowders. I got one or two in stock right now. If you guys want to come by, take a look. And, they're going to be really nice, really, really nice.
Cool.
And since there's hardly any squid around to catch, you're going to need a good crowder to catch a little bit that there is.
Yeah.
And that's a question for Owen. Where the hell's all of our squid?
Yeah,
exactly.
Any idea, Owen?
Got a lot of head shakes over here.
Yeah. No, I was expecting that question to come up, to be honest. It's probably pushed further north. You know, like when we saw the El Nino 2015, there was squid in Oregon, and none of the boats were ready to catch it. So a lot of the commercial boats were like, okay, we've got squid here. What do we do?
Yeah.
So it's probably pushing north.
Interesting. All right. Well, Mark, how do we find you?
Pete, we're in Huntington Beach. We're on the corner of Bolsa Chica and Edinger, and the phone number at the store is 714-840-4262. The website's pacificedgetackle.com. And time to go fishing, guys. It's going to be nicer weather here this week, and there is a lot of fish around, and time to go.
Let's go get them.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate that very much, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
You got it. We'll see you guys.
See you, Mark. All right. Well, speaking of what you do when you go get them, you take them to the spot, and that's Fisherman's Processing and the Fish Pros, where you can get the premier processing experience. Check out the easier online system to book your processing orders when you return from your long-range trips. With more team members, Fisherman's Processing stays far ahead of the rest. More same-day capacity, the finest in customer service. You can stop by their location in Old Town on Taylor Street or check fishermansprocessing.com and be sure you make that reservation today.
For sure. And, hey, some great texts rolling through. A lot of great texts. A lot of good questions for Owen, for sure. And this is a good one from Norman in San Diego. He says, hi, guys. Owen, such an interesting and great guest. Great show. Question for Owen. How surprising was it to find that large numbers of big bluefin locally were just offshore from San Diego? Were they always there? Related question, do you think that other game fish populations in local deep waters are yet to be discovered?
Oh, man. Yeah, no, that big bluefin, like I said, it's been rebuilding the population in general throughout the Pacific. So back in 2012, I don't know if you guys remember, the recreational limit went down to 2, but there were huge commercial the quotas for the commercial boats were also dropped. So I personally was just like, when it started showing up, I thought maybe these fish are staying longer because the food that they like to eat is here right now. But I've come around to the fact that, or the realization that it's probably the regulations that were put in place. So the population in general is just rebuilding. So we're seeing these bigger, larger fish on our side of the Pacific because they're not getting caught.
Yeah.
What do you have an opinion? And I know there's nothing, you know, in cycles or fishery or what, but in the beginning of our big bluefin cycle, it feels like we saw more of the largest of them, more of the, you know, big 200 pounders and 300 pounders and even, you know, the higher end of 300 pounds. And as we've really settled into this cycle, there's still lots of big fish around, but it doesn't feel like, at least that we're catching on the sport side of things, as much of that extreme big one. Any thoughts or anything to that?
Couple thoughts. So these fish don't necessarily stay here until they get 300 pounds every year. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they swim back at 100 or 150 pounds. They will swim back to the Western Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. So whatever.
And will they spawn at that size?
If they get back onto the spawning grounds, they might start spawning. Yeah.
Okay.
Like 50% of the population, they call it like L50, is basically like the size class where you got a 50-50 chance of being actively
big
spawning.
Big enough to do.
Which is around 150, 175 pounds. But so either there's whatever the signal for them to swim back to the Western Pacific Ocean, you know, is happening more regularly right now, so we're not seeing these larger fish stay around as long, or are maybe more of them are now getting caught as we get better and better at it with this, you know, the commercial limit.
Sure.
The commercial quotas are starting to go back up a little bit since the population size is rebounding, so the commercial guys might be catching more. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
What impacts the resource more, commercial fishing or sport fishing?
I think it's definitely commercial fishing.
Commercial fishing.
Those guys target those things with big nets and stuff.
So. Does sport fishing really have much of an impact at all?
They're catching a lot of fish, but I don't think it's to the point where it's actually going to drive the population down.
It's the commercial fishing that does it.
They're good at it.
Definitely.
They're really good at it. And they're good at targeting.
And they have lots of tools to make it work.
And they're very good at targeting exactly what they want. And what they want isn't small ones.
Nope.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. Well, he had a great text come through, I thought. Says, good morning, guys. I'm learning a ton already. My kids are at the stage where they like to start talking about what they want to do when they grow up. One of them is very interested in the ocean. What would you recommend to study outside of marine biology to help point them in the right direction to build a strong resume to get a career, to get into the marine biology career? Thanks for all the pointers. Great show. And that's from Rory in Lakeside.
Yeah, no, great question.
And there's been a few questions like that. People want to know, have a son, you know, they want to be like you.
Yeah, I've had a lot of really good volunteers through my years at the lab. So, you know, basically just one thing that you learn basic biology, you know, start with the basics in ecology, you know, look at, you know, the basic, what drives like, you know, growth and human, you know, even just human biology. It all comes into play. Then also look at, you know, like, yeah, I don't know, climate stuff, but if you really want to get into it, it's all about not necessarily what you know, but who you know and if they like you, and putting your foot in the door and keeping your foot in the door, trying to find as many volunteer opportunities as you can, go to as many like summer camps as you can, like Catalina Island has a great summer camp, get them out there for that, and just also go be on the water, be around the ocean, you know, that's the most important part, I think, is get in the water, get on the water.
When you guys are adding people to your projects and to the lab, like what are the fields? Is it you know, is it more that? Is it more people that you've worked with on a volunteer basis and then a spot comes up to add them to one of your projects? Or is it strictly, you know, this degree supports what we're trying to do? Like how do you add people to the team when you guys are doing so?
Yeah, though it is, like I said, like not necessarily what you know, but who you know. Yeah. You know, like when I started, I didn't really know much about albacore or anything like that, and I was thrown on the boat right into the mix, and I had to, you know, like sink or swim. Mm-hmm. But it varies. You know, a lot of projects we're looking for very specific people mm-hmm. that have a very specific knowledge base, so it can go both ways.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great one, Rory.
Yeah, lots of good ones. Huh? Hey. Some super good texts here and this one it's like, hey Pete and Rick and Owen, great show. I have 2-day charter on the Pacific Voyager with Max today, leaves at 10 o'clock and we're avoiding the bad weather outside. Good idea for that. Max is talking about taking us to Baja Coast to fish for yellows and rockfish. We're bringing along 80 pound just in case. Owen, what's your take on the albacore showing up with the cooler conditions that are moving in right now?
Yeah, again, million-dollar question. I wish I had an answer for that. It would be interesting. It was that one that was caught on the Tribute earlier this year. It's just like, oh, here we go. There's been like one or two every year, it seems like. But I don't have a crystal ball. Sorry about that.
I mean, is it possible that they, even with this El Nino, strong El Nino in the fall, predicting it could swing in?
Anything's possible, but anything. You know, I'm not putting my money on albacore showing up.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Be better off putting your money on yellowfin or Dorado,
this year. Yeah.
Is that El Nino a real deal?
It's looking like it's going to happen.
Is it?
What actually it turns into is yet to be determined. You know, like a lot of this stuff, we know like what happened in the past, but does that necessarily predict the future? No.
Yeah.
So
that was from Jolene, by the way, and good luck on your trip, Jolene. Yeah.
The warmer water that we've experienced early this year, does that have effect from the El Nino that will be in the fall, or are those two different anomalies that happen to be coinciding?
Great question. They're two different anomalies, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the impacts from the El Nino are definitely not hitting our waters yet. It starts around the equator. It's based on the sea surface temperature around the equator. In a certain threshold, once it hits a certain threshold, then it's officially called an El Nino. It's not quite there yet. There's some great websites you can go to. If you Google Oceanic Nino Index, it'll show you a track record or data going back to like the 30s or something like that,
cool.
which shows you when each El Nino and when each La Nina happened, and it'll tell you exactly like what is the reasons and why you name it an El Nino versus a La Nina. But no, the warmer water that we've seen here is more just low upwelling earlier in the year.
It's like a bubble.
Yeah. So, but that coupled with the El Nino might create some interesting situations.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Wow. And you said that when, you know, if indeed it does continue to push forward and we do have the big El Nino that, you know, some have predicted, that would be a later in the fall scenario.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'd be a later in the fall. Maybe it's, we'll see how things, you know, it could develop faster. But when you see impacts, it'll probably more be like fall, winter, you know, and it actually might, it could even go into next spring. Some of these things prolong.
That'd be cool.
They change the future years too. So,
yeah. Hey, speaking of our favorite fish to catch, yellowtail and calico bass, nothing's better, of course, than Cedros Island. You ever been to Cedros?
I was there once, and it was amazing. Yeah, some of the best surface island fishing I've ever had.
Yeah. Why? Why is it? Why is it water conditions down there? Is it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really know. I think it's a resource that's not really overfished ever. Yeah. So it's just down there. And
they protect it. The islanders protect that
definitely
pretty well because it's their livelihood.
You know, we are on the kind of the northernmost extent of the yellowtail range too. Generally, there's more large yellowtail in Baja.
Yeah.
That's
central.
Yeah. I mean, you don't see yellowtail past Santa Barbara really, or, you know, Monterey Bay or anything like that. So this is the northern extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're more prevalent. Well, speaking of Cedros, we want to welcome a new sponsor who's an old sponsor to Let's Talk Hookup, and that's Casa de Cedros. It's formerly Cedros Kayak Fishing. Jeff Mariani and his group there specialize in small groups, maximum of 6 people. They have their own charter flight, 6 people on the plane, and goes from CBX in Tijuana there. And we've put together a Let's Talk Hookup trip with them in mid-August, August 14th through the 17th. It's a Friday through Monday. So you fly there early in the morning on that 6-passenger plane. You arrive and you go fishing. And they fish hard at Casa de Cedros. And so you get a 3-quarter day fishing that way. Then you're going to fish all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and then fly home Monday morning.
Oh, dude.
Well, how about that for a 3-day weekend,
all the way
There's a rumor that you might go.
It's beyond a rumor. I gotta double check with the boss and grandma to make sure the boys are covered. But
you may be
short of those two things. I'll be going with you for sure.
For sure. So that means there's 5 spots left. It's $29.99, and that includes your round trip flight, your CBX pass. It includes all your meals. One room. You get your own room.
Yeah, the accommodations are second to none.
It's a beautiful house up on the hill overlooking the ocean. Both Rick and I have been there. It's really a fantastic place. The only extras are going to be your tips and your Mexican license and any booze that you want to drink. But everything else is included. The fantastic meals by the fireside there. All your fish processing, everything. So if you want to go, give Katie a call. Katie's running the show over there. Casa de Cedros. Casa-de-cedros.com, or just Google Casa de Cedros and give Katie a call or check out their website. But again, our trip with the possibility of Rock God Rick pending a notification is
boys got to get covered and mom's good. I'm out the door. We're doing it.
August 14 through 17. That'll be our trip, but they have other trips available too. So you want to go on that trip, jump on it quick.
I'm pumped, man. Yeah, that's really cool.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, that's going to be a really fun one. Yeah. Well, hey, we were having a lot of fun here. Lots of great Let's Talk Hookup still to come your way. And another great text. Good morning, Pete, Rick, and Owen. Owen, I hear a lot on social media about funding from NOAA, wanting to know, worries about cut to funding and what it could mean to us. Also, my big question is, I hear a lot about ships coming in from other areas and releasing their ballast off our coast and introducing new things that might affect our kelp and marine environment. Do you ever interact with Dr. Peter Dutton or Jeffrey Seminoff, who work with sea turtles? I'm loving this show so much. Thanks for everything. That's from Harry in Chula Vista.
There's been, with any administration that comes in, there's changes to priorities and funding and stuff like that. Fortunately, we at my level have still been able to do the work that we do and get the data that needs to be produced to the people that need the data to make decisions on management. So we're still plugging along and doing our best, but we'll see where it goes. And then, that's a great question about ships releasing their ballast off there. You know, all kinds of things like that happen and have happened historically. You know, there's introduced species in all kinds of different environments, not necessarily just the ocean, but also on land. I do work with Jeff, or I know Jeff. I don't work with Jeff. He's got an office just down the hall from me.
He's with NOAA, though.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, Sea Turtle. Jeff Seminoff. I don't know Pete Dutton, but they're in the same lab. And, yeah, that division is focused on sea turtle research.
Does that have to do with the population that we have in San Diego Bay, or is it just turtle up and down as they migrate up and down Baja and California, or what do they do?
They do like local sampling and surveys of the sea turtle populations, like in San Diego Bay. They will go into the bay and they will capture and release a bunch of the sea turtles and look at condition of the turtles and stuff like that. But they're also involved heavily in international studies on all the turtles. Yeah,
that always trips me out, and I forget it, that we have a population a big population of turtles, that's where their home is in the back of that bay. And it's just something that you know, falls off of my radar, but it's a really cool thing that exists back there.
Yeah. And all of a sudden you'll be down there catching bonefish and see a sea turtle's head pop up.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Or right off La Jolla. I mean, they're even up the coast in like the bays up in LA and stuff like that, where the warm water is. Yeah. They really like that, like where the warmer water in the bay is.
And with the potential of an El Nino, we might see more of them here in the fall.
Yeah, well, we might. I mean, these are green sea turtles that we have like in the bay and stuff like that. But in El Nino, generally, it's known to increase the local number of loggerhead sea turtles, which are generally, they're kind of a bigger sea turtle. Yeah.
They're an endangered species too, right?
Yeah, they're all pretty, their populations are all threatened.
Yeah,
And they're more offshore. You'll see them offshore. It's amazing.
They're an amazing sight.
They're like, generally giant. Smaller ones. So that's one of the crazy things is in terms of fisheries regulations, like things like an El Nino will trigger certain things where they expect more loggerhead sea turtles. So you should be avoiding these areas at this time.
Uh-huh.
A lot of this stuff is moving towards dynamic fisheries management where you can kind of, you know what happened in the past and you can try and predict the future and put things in place that will, you know, limit interactions with certain animals.
Speaking of marine mammals that we see, why is it that when bluefin fishing is really good, you see a lot of blue whales around the same zones?
That's a good question. They're probably, you know, eating the same stuff.
Is it?
Yeah.
They're just feeding.
Yeah. I'm not a mammal guy. I think me and my relationship with mammals is definitely, it's touch and go. I've had some experiences off La Jolla where I felt like I was going to get sunk by a whale in the middle of the night while fishing for sea bass. People don't believe me, but it was a good story.
Is that story?
Sitting there on anchor right off La Jolla in the middle of the night. This is when I was fishing off a 12-foot skiff.
Oh.
And I was the only one awake because I'm on a 12-foot skiff. Everyone else is passed out on their nice little cuddy cabins and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I'm sitting there awake, and all of a sudden I hear sound like a boat where you hear this ch-ch-ch, like a boat hull coming in. I was like, I don't see any lights. And it was a whale breaching.
Oh.
Coming in through. And there was a small spot of like 10, 15 boats anchored up. And this whale comes through, breaches all the way through all of us.
Come on.
Oh,
No.
Probably
joke.
A humpback?
I was the only one saw it. I think it was a humpback, yeah. And then I'm sitting there on the boat, and I'm like, I had a weird feeling, right? And I look over, 2 feet from the boat, the thing spy hops, sticks its head out of the water.
Come on.
Looks at me in the eye. I could have reached out and punched it.
Really?
And everyone else is asleep, and I'm sitting here like in the smallest boat out there. The thing turns, grabs, snags both my lines and proceeds to spool me, and I was just like, I pulled the anchor.
I bet you did.
Yeah, like, I'm out of here.
How many of your buddies accused you of having too many cold ones that night?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. Nobody believed me. And they stopped anchoring up next to me after that.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's when you went and got your Parker, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, I need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
Hey, John from Whittier has an interesting question. It's probably not your idea, but as a fisherman, everybody, all of us look at wind and such like that. He says, this is a super informative show. Thank you. I have a question about wind. It seems that all the wind prediction apps differ on what conditions will be like and a lot of times are inaccurate. What do you think is the best way to plan a few days ahead for a trip on the water?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's the number one question is when I go out and I'm planning a trip, I look at every one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I look at all the apps.
What do you look?
Look at Surfline. Like Windy. I can't remember their other names. Wind Sail or something like that. I could pull my phone up.
Sailflow.
Sailflow, yeah. And then I also look at, you know, National Marine Fisheries, NOAA's as well. I look at all three of them and then kind of look at what was happening the last week and look, you know, 2 days out, 4 days out, a week out. Yeah, just use them all.
Yeah, get it, yeah. We got so many good things at our fingertips. Use all of them.
So Captain Dave from the Tomahawk turned me on and turned our listeners on to an app called Ventusky, V-E-N-T-U-S-K-Y. I have been watching Ventusky and Windy side by side, not only here, but also all the time I spend up in Montana fishing up there, because wind is a big factor on a lake and a river up there, too. I find Ventusky to be so much more accurate on the predictions than Windy or anything else I look at. It's $10 a year. I turned it on to my friend Chris Scott up there, and that's all he looks at now. And that came from Dave, and he said this is what I look at. It looks, but
spell it one more time.
Now you're going to test
me. Oh, my bad. No.
I'll look it up. Yeah, I believe it's V-E-N-T-U-S-K-Y.
Okay.
I'll look it up. But
cool.
But yeah, that is something that you should put on one of your looks. It's not 100% like any of the predictions, but it's pretty darn good.
$10 a year I can handle, though. Like if that's all it's going to cost to have something that accurate. I'm a Windy guy. Like I look at Windy all the time and it's good, but you're right. It's like all of them, it can be off.
Yeah.
And like when you're fishing in small boats offshore, off can be a whole lot more when you're fishing on the Parker than it is when you're on the Royal Star. So.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. I do. And again, I know it's not your level of expertise, but you're a local beach fisherman. So, good morning, guys. What a great guest this is. A fantastic show. My question for Owen, how many squid beds are off of San Diego and what is the best time of year to make the squid or anything else, that you happen to know about the squid population? Do they always return to the same areas? Does it differ? Why? All those things. That's from, John. In San Diego.
Oh man! Again, if I had a crystal ball, I wish I could. Yeah. I wish I could tell you where
that'd
the squid.
That'd be a real one. You'd love to have.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you where the squid nest is right now, but I don't know at this time. But in general, they seem to have, like, the same areas, not necessarily the exact same, like, you know, GPS numbers or something. But sandy bottom, you know, like 60 to 110 feet of water. There are squid nests much deeper sometimes in the La Jolla Canyon, but yeah. I don't, any time of year, I've seen squid float in La Jolla in the middle of summer, you know, like at the surface. And that I've had winters where the squid's there all February through March, whatever, you know. So it's, I can't predict that.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
The thought that it is only in the cooler winter times, that for sure is not the case.
Yeah, no, it isn't. Well, I mean, you got to think about, like, so there's sea surface temperature, right? But that doesn't mean dictate the temperature on the seafloor.
And especially a place like that has that submarine canyon where there's a lot of upwelling and stuff changes a lot over in La Jolla and stuff.
Exactly, right? So the water on the bottom could be colder than they want even, or whatever perfect temperatures. But
yeah, whatever it is. So like you said earlier in the show when Mark was talking about squid, a lot of it may be pushed north just because of the water conditions, right?
Yep. So like when I saw the signs of the El Nino coming, I was like, oh, great. We're not going to be sitting on an anchor like with the light out this year probably.
Not much sea bass happening.
That was my thought. But
do you like doing that?
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, sitting there all night.
As long as the whales don't come through.
As long as the whales don't come through. Yeah, for sure. So that website is Ventusky.
Cool.
Ventusky. It's Ventusky. Ventusky.com.
I'm doing that. That's great.
It's one that's been pretty accurate for me.
Yeah, I like it. Hey, when we come back, we got a lot more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way and a whole lot more with Owen. You stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk Hookup. It's Southern California Sport Fishing Voice on the Let's Talk Hookup app as well as Facebook and YouTube Live.
Even the biggest tuna can become line shy. That's why Seaguar has introduced Big Game Gold Label Leader Coils. Seaguar's Big Game Gold Label is a thinner yet stronger 100% fluorocarbon leader. That means it's less visible underwater and creates more natural presentations for better catch rates on leader shy fish. It helps if you fool and then catch the monsters of the sea. With exceptional knot and tensile strength, this advanced leader material is now available in 100 to 200-pound leader coils. Get Seaguar Gold Label at your favorite tackle dealer or learn more at Seaguar.com.
Baker Marine knows you need a pair of stabilized binoculars, and Fujinon just made the deal even sweeter with an additional $200 savings on their amazing bundle deal. Here's what's included: Fujinon Technostabby TSX 1440 binoculars, Pelican Vault case with custom laser-cut foam insert, plus the Fujinon polarized filters at $1,704 retail value for just $1,299.99. You save over $400. This is the best deal ever on these amazing binoculars. The Fujinon Technostabby TSX 1440 delivers rock-steady vision, and now protect your investment with the custom Pelican case and the polarized filters that help you find more on the water. This special bundle is available at Baker Marine on Shelter Island for a limited time only. Stop by their store on Shelter Island in San Diego and take advantage on this never-before-seen bundle pricing on the Fujinon TSX 1440 binoculars, a savings of over $400. Learn more at BakerMarine.com.
It's time to talk about great gear from Shimano. You know, you talked earlier about that new great CalStar rod with a Tranx on it. There is nothing better than a Tranx. And now with the new Tranx 400, the new one, that adds a whole new dimension to throwing smaller surface irons.
You hit the nail on the head. Mark was right. Tranx 500 on the heavy version of that prototype is going to be great. I think the star is going to be the medium and a Tranx 400, especially because of what they've done to the newest series of Tranx 400, where they've incorporated the side plate and frame to be all machined from the same piece. And that's the big difference is you get really good frame rigidity, which makes it a lot stronger. It basically just equates into you putting a lot more power to the reel handle.
Yeah, that's for sure. That new Tranx 400, you got to get it. Check it out at your local Shimano dealer. It's a good one.
The best one.
Hello, this is Captain Mike Totter from Search of Sport Fishing. Alongside my colleague, Chef Josh Evans, and our dedicated team, we invite you to join us aboard the Searcher. Our fishing trips range from a day and a half to 8 days, available May through November, and include charter options. We're committed to upholding a legacy of top-notch customer service, delicious food, and a friendly and talented crew. Book your fishing adventure online at searchofsportfishing.com or call Rachel at 619-226-2403. That's searchofsportfishing.com. We look forward to welcome you aboard.
A top fleet and superb fishing is what Seaforth Sport Fishing in Mission Bay is all about. With free parking and fully stocked tackle shop, it's no wonder Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top boats like the Aztec, Cortez, Endeavor, Apollo, Outer Limit, Elgato Dos, Pride, Tribute, Pacifica, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus, the new Seaforth, Sea-Watch, and San Diego offer the finest half and full day trips available. Seaforth Sport Fishing. For charters or regular open party schedule, check seaforthlanding.com. Run by fishermen for fishermen in Mission Bay.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Having a great time here with Owen this morning. What an informative show this has been. A lot of fun.
Really good stuff.
Man, just some killer info. I'm hoping that I could steal one, a question of my own. Do you do any work with, you're obviously so knowledgeable on the bluefin side of thing, and I know you said you don't do a whole lot with yellowfin. What about the other one? Any work with Big Eye at all, or any thoughts as to why we saw a little flash of it a few years ago, but obviously haven't seen much of it in quite a few years. What's your thoughts on Big Eye, if you have any?
I don't do any work on Big Eye, but I do have some thoughts, I know that back in the 80s, 90s, there's some big ones that would come through later in the year oftentimes, I think, at least from what I've heard. I wasn't fishing offshore during those years, so I never caught one, unfortunately. They're I don't know why we haven't seen them. Yeah. I don't know if you – did you see those Big Eye that were off of Fort Bragg?
I'm fascinated by it. That it missed us, but, somehow came in from the west or whatever. And, we have a customer who is a very good offshore fisherman that travels and fishes a lot in Cabo and Costa Rica, but his home base is Fort Bragg and is very good salmon and albacore guy. But then when the opportunity at Big Bluefin and then Big Eye also arose, he was just – he had the boat and the gear that was very astounding and very good ocean conditions guy and caught kind of a bunch of them, like a bunch being, a handful, but still we'd go out and we'd get, once or twice a week, we get a picture of a 150-pound Big Eye, and it was only up there, we didn't really have it much in the way of San Diego. I'm fascinated by that fish and its time of when it was here was just a little before my time, so I really never got to participate in the fun Big Eye fishing around here. And
so there's speculation that I've heard said before that the commercial fleet's a lot responsible for them not being around because the FADs, the fish aggregating devices that the commercial guys have in the Eastern Pacific down below us, aggregate a lot of juvenile big eye. Yeah. And then they go in and wrap that school and it's gone. It's done. Any truth to that?
I mean, there is some truth to that. You target those juvenile fish, you know, it's not good for the population overall. Yeah. In technology has gotten so much better, so they're just better at what they do.
Yeah. You know? So I mean, they actually, on these FADs, correct me if I'm wrong, they actually have fish finders, and then they know and they can look at those fish finders from hundreds of miles away and say, okay, there's a school on it. Let's go wrap it.
Yeah, exactly. The technology.
There's no chance.
It's out of control. Yeah. And they set them out so they can monitor like entire areas. Some of the regulations that are being put into place, though, are like, you know, maybe we'll put an end to some of that on the juvenile fish, you know, because you know what's there. So, you know, those are small fish. So let's not go wrap those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. We can have restraint just as much as we can have access.
Exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't seem that any of that technology should be allowed, period, for commercial fishing. But I guess you can't stop technology, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much you can do about that.
No, yeah. For sure.
Hey, I had a fun text come through from Laney in Sierra Madre. It says, I'm really curious to know what Owen's thoughts are, if at all, in regards to sand bass. We've gone from almost total shutdown to an abundance, you know, what seems like in a period as short of a year or so. Personally, I think it might just be related to how much we targeted that fish now versus 20 or 30 years ago. But I'd really like to know a scientist's opinion.
Yeah, I'm not a really good expert on sand bass or inshore species like that in general, but I do know the Pfluger Institute of Environmental Research is starting a project right now with SAC, Sport Fishing Association in California, to look at like trans-boundary migration and stuff like that. They're tagging a lot of fish, so we'll get a better idea of their movement. In general, though, like, you know, when you target those fish when they're on the spawning grounds and you hammer them, it might actually be what's putting a little bit of a dent into them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not something that I actually study or spend much time thinking about because I like pelagics.
Pelagic is your thing. So speaking of which, and I know that, again, the feds, NOAA regulates ground fish in the West Coast. You don't do any ground fish at all, rockfish, ground fish?
I don't, no. I know some people that do, but I don't do any of that work yet.
That's a very specialized like thing. So you don't really... And when you talk about otoliths and stuff like that, that's where otoliths really come into play a lot, too, is on ground fish, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Do they, when they're doing a lot of their studies on ground fish and populations and stuff, is that what they're studying, like you study the otoliths of those?
For sure, yeah. No, knowing the age of the fish is like one of the most important things. Deal. Yeah. And the only way to do that is with an otolith. So there is a project with Sport Fishing Association of California now where people are collecting more otoliths from more regions, working with the fishermen. Again, working with the fishermen is like the most important thing I think you can do to get better data.
Yeah.
So a lot of these issues with like, you know, closures or species limits reductions, some of it is due to not having enough data for certain species. So collecting that, working with fishermen is the only way to get the data that fisheries managers need to be able to do the job and have the, you know, most accurate like results.
Yeah. Hey, someone just happened up there, but it was Dennis in National City says, Owen's such a wealth of knowledge and a nice guy. I've messaged him multiple times on fished IDs, and he's always provided me with great information. I was lucky enough to share the good old days of wide open yellowtail and white sea bass in La Jolla fishing off my kayak in 2006. Owen, what's your biggest yellowtail and white sea bass from a boat in La Jolla? And he says, you remember pulling on 50 pounders.
Oh, what's up, Dennis? Dude, I remember one of my best days kayak fishing off La Jolla, pulled out there. Made live squid, dropped down two squid, double hookup. One was like a 30-pound yellow, the other was like a 27-pound yellow. And I had squid left in the tank. I handed it off to Dennis, and he caught a sea bass. I went home, and he caught sea bass.
Never been so bummed to have two giant yellows.
No, but no, my biggest yellow off La Jolla was 47 pounds.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's a real one.
That's a good fish.
Shoo. Okay, here's my question. Do you take the otoliths out and study them?
I do. I had a problem where everything I caught, I would take the otoliths out for.
Of course.
And I'd keep it. And some things never go anywhere. Some things do. But
what is a yellowtail? I know what a sea bass. I have lots of sea bass otoliths. But what does a yellowtail otolith look like? How big is it?
They're pretty small. They're super small and fragile. Yeah, I couldn't draw the picture. I haven't looked at one in a long time. But they're more similar to like a tuna. size and shape of otoliths is actually a really interesting
topic.
That was
going to be my question.
Yeah, because so like rockfish have really big otoliths. Swordfish have tiny otoliths. They're like, I don't know, trying to make like a seed off like a sunflower or something.
Really?
No, smaller than that, smaller than that. Yeah, so size
on a
of,
fish that could be hundreds of pounds.
Yeah, 500-pound swordfish will have
smaller than a sunflower
smaller
seed.
Otolith than an anchovy.
What
wow.
a come on!
Yeah.
What a trip!
No, straight up.
Wow.
Yeah, and then rockfish. Yeah, so the size is generally dependent on their behavior.
Okay.
Like a rockfish relies on sound. You know, so they're sitting on the bottom. So the otolith again is like the equivalent of the human ear bone.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to be able to hear things better than something in the pelagic environment that's swimming around in the middle of nowhere, like doing deep dives up and down the water column. Yeah. They need an otolith which is smaller and can react faster. Because it's also like, you know, balance. Our ears control our balance. Mm. So when the swordfish is down there doing whatever it's doing, it needs to be able to move real fast. And it needs an otolith that responds really quickly. But a rockfish is just sitting on the bottom. And our sea bass is just like talking to each other.
Yeah.
So they need to hear. And that bounces the vibration off a bigger otolith is better hearing.
That's cool.
Is a sea bass considered a pelagic?
No.
No.
Yeah.
It's what would it be considered?
It's a coastal.
Coastal play. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and why do they have such big otoliths? Just because that's what they do a lot at night.
Yeah, again, like just you heard
communication.
Croakers.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they make a lot of noise,
uh-huh.
So they're talking to each other.
They're talking to each other.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, so the bigger the otolith, the better they can hear it.
Uh huh.
You know what? Just on size of otoliths, like the ones that have like the most impressive that I've ever got to come across are those. Short raker rock cods that we catch up in deep water in Alaska, like for size of fish and then the size of that, you know, the size of the stone, like those things are just, you know, you catch one of those real big ones, a 20 plus
and they're
pounder.
1,000 feet deep.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You'll, you know, so a 20 pounder, which certainly is a big rockfish, it'll have a bigger otolith than, you know, than this, the 50 and 60 pound sea bass that we've ever caught. You know,
wow.
It's just like a giant one to the size of the fish.
Yeah.
Cool looking.
Size of otoliths differ in the size of the bluefin tuna. In other words, would a 300-pound bluefin tuna have a much bigger otolith than a 50-pound bluefin tuna?
It's bigger, but it's not much bigger.
Not much. Like,
no.
Like how big is an otolith on a 300-pounder?
You know, probably like 5 centimeters long or five.
Like size of a sunflower seed, like you're
yeah,
saying,
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that. And how big is an otolith on a 50-pound bluefin tuna?
Only a couple of centimeters longer.
That's not,
yeah,
really?
Not much.
Not much.
And,
they're smaller, super fragile. Like, I'm working with the sport guys, and, you know, when you, whatever,
spike them.
I'll get the heads off these fish and I'll bring them back to the lab and chop them up. And if, depending on the boat, some boats have deckhands that really like to spike the fish, you know, so I'll cut open the head and I'll pull out the otolith and it's just smashed.
Crushed.
Yeah.
So that kind of answered my question. I was going to be curious. Where does the otolith live in a tuna? And then what's your procedure like for gaining access to it?
So they're just in the back of the brain. There's okay. Either on the right and left side. As far back in the brain as you can get.
Okay.
So if it's a smaller tuna, I'll just take, you know, a standard wood saw, prop the head up and just like cut straight down. But these larger tuna, I get the saws all out.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, cool. it's pretty fun actually. Like that's what I was doing this last week was, you know, we had, those bigger fish that I collected a couple dozen heads off of and you're sitting there with the saws all just like cranking, like cutting basically.
I mean, a 300-pounder is a lot of, that's a
yeah.
lot of head to cut through.
You're cutting basically the entire front of the fish off and then scooping the brain out with your finger and then like, trying carefully to reach back there with really fine forceps and pull
okay.
them out. Yeah.
And where is that in relation, just for us to get a visual, like where is that in relation to like eyes and gill plates and that kind of stuff? Like where's the brain
yeah.
kind of located?
Good question. It's like basically straight back from the eye, about like an inch or so.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah.
So that's a good thing too for a guy that's on a skiff that is wanting to put a spike into a fish. You know, I that is something that I see all the time. Like you go on you said it best. You go on the sport boats or the guys that are just pros. That fish comes on board and like it's no wild man stabbing motion. Just a quick little whoop and like
yep,
and that's
yep.
it. And that fish is immediately dispatched. And then we catch a 200-pounder in the skiff, and I got to try 14 different times and the wrong angle, and it never is a you know like a.
So when Owen puts a spike in a fish, where do you put it?
So yeah, it's basically you want to angle it back towards the back of the brain. Just to locate where you can put the spike through, if you run your finger like right down the center of the head, you'll feel if there's like a little dip kind of like right there, and it's almost softer. And that's almost like it's like a window kind of where they can see judge light because the sunlight gets through there. And actually,
cool.
So if, there's just like almost like a little soft spot.
Like you can spike feel it in there.
You can run your finger and you can feel this like little divot, and then just spike it right there. But don't go straight down towards the mouth. You want to go back towards
back toward the tail.
Yeah,
that far back,
like a 45-degree angle.
45-degree angle. Okay. Into the head. Yeah.
And then what about a yellowtail? Same thing.
Same. Yeah. Same.
And they have a soft spot too.
It's not as predominant.
As a tuna.
Yeah.
Like a guy that looks at them and deals with them all the time. You see it, but. It's not a...
Yeah,
not a
you might not see it.
But again, don't go straight down. Just don't go straight 45-degree angle.
Yeah. After cutting thousands and thousands
That's what
miles,
I'm saying,
yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, I can take the forceps now and just put them back there without even looking and pull them out.
What a trip. That's cool.
Yeah, interesting.
I love that.
Anna in the northwest corner, I'm thinking that's the Pacific Northwest, she says, have you ever caught an OPA on rod and reel, and what's the best way to target them on a pro?
Oh, man.
Because you said OPA's kind of one of your deals, right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite fish. I have not personally rod and reeled an OPA, but one of my volunteers on my skiff hooked one on a kelp patty on 15-pound test about 20 miles offshore here, like around the 182. We were fishing Dorado, live mackerel. Fly line on a kelp patty. He had just caught a Dorado. He didn't tell me he was fishing 15-pound test.
Yeah.
On a mackerel. Come on.
And he's fly lining a mackerel on a kelp patty, and he gets bit, and I'm like, it's not a Dorado. I'm like, you got a nice yellow. And it comes up to color, and I didn't see it. And he's like, it's an OPA. I was like, I'm like, if it's an OPA, you're going over the side.
Yeah.
Sure enough, like a few minutes later, it's 15-pound test. Comes up super squirrely, OPA. Like 65-pounder, we gaffed it, put it on the boat. It was amazing.
Got it on 15.
Yep.
That's wow. So
I've never
caught
one. I hope I can one day.
Yeah.
So what's so special about them? Are they pretty predominant? Are they prevalent here? Are they just a rare species that we don't see that much? I mean, is it something that you can target?
I don't think you can. You can't necessarily target them. Some years there's more. Some years they're more abundant.
And like, what kind of years? Warm water years? Cold water years?
I think. From looking at a lot of their stomachs, years where there's squid around, I think, would probably be more abundant OPA. They like squid. They're like a swordfish that likes squid, and they're deeper in the water column generally. Yeah. So deep drops, like maybe shallower than swordfish, I think, is where you might catch an OPA. But they do come up and down all throughout the water column, you know. And, yeah, they're not a schooling fish. So they're more like in loose aggregations. That's why targeting them is really hard. But... same kind of thing, like we were targeting swordfish. Same thing. You want to look for structure. You want to have your bait in the right place, you know, deep in the water. Yeah.
What family are they in? I didn't know.
They're in the same family as, like, ribbonfish. Like, like oarfish.
Oarfish. Okay. Yeah. So they're, like, a deep water species.
Yeah, generally. But they're also, like, able to regulate their body temperature. I don't know if you saw that study where...
yeah, that was
they're,
cool.
They're warm-blooded, essentially. That was work that we did at the lab here in La Jolla that I was involved with.
They're warm-blooded.
They're able to regulate their entire body temperature. Like sharks and tunas, they're regionally endothermic, where they can warm certain parts of their body. But the OPA has this unique evolutionary adaptation where it's able to circulate the warm blood through its entire body.
And are they the only fish that we know of that is completely
fish.
Warm-blooded?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So they're just mysterious.
Yeah, it's rad. And cool-looking...
And
tastes good.
Yeah.
And the meat's different. Like, it's just everything about that fish is cool.
Oh, yeah.
Do yellowfin, bluefin, albacore, big eye regulate their body temperatures the same? Are they all the same? No.
No, they're different. No, that's why, like, if you dissect a bluefin versus a yellowfin or a big eye, they have the bluefin and the albacore have an additional adaptation where if you look at the liver will have these lines through it. They're called like countercurrent heat exchangers, striations. So it's the blood vessels are passing over each other. So the warm blood on this side transfers to the other vessel. But you look at a yellowfin, it doesn't have that.
Interesting.
So it kind of makes sense. They're more tropical. They don't need to regulate their body temperature as much. But that's one of the key identification things too from big eye. So big eye spend a lot more time at depth, like deeper in the water, whereas yellowfin are generally shallower. Big eye make much deeper dives. And you look at their liver, it's got these lines through it.
The striations.
And that's like, if you've got a fish that's been in the fish hole for like a week or whatever, however long, and you It could be elfin, could be a big guy. Look at the liver.
That's the real test. Yeah. Oh, we need another hour, dude. What a fun show this has been. Hey, when we come back, we got more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way, including finding out who's going fishing on board the Bell. You stay tuned. More Let's Talk Hookup coming your way on the Let's Talk Hookup app, Facebook, and YouTube Live.
Everything about Katmai Lodge is first rate, and it should be on the bucket list of everyone who enjoys fishing. This is Brandon Bono. My visit to Katmai Lodge is an experience I will never forget. Constructed on the banks of the Alagnac River in Katmai National Park, the lodge is a fishing dream come true. The experience is incomparable. Whether bait casting, spin, or fly fishing, you'll find king, sockeye, chum, coho, and pink salmon, plus trout, grayling, char, and Dolly Varden. Their guides are amazing. Days are exciting and fun with hot lunches and snacks served on the river. The brown bears, bald eagles, beaver, otters, and other wildlife you see is amazing. The lodge staff is great. There's complimentary wine, beer, and appetizers before a fantastic dinner every evening. Take it from me, a trip to Katmai Lodge should be on your list. For information, visit katmai.com or call 1-800-330-0326. Once again, that's Katmai Lodge, KATMAI.com.
I believe there is no doubt that the finest sport fishing in the world starts right here in San Diego. This is Captain Frank Lopresti. Our fleet of long-range boats and crew are unmatched, and the Royal Polaris and Shogun are right at the top of the list. Captain Jonathan Yamati and his crew aboard the Royal Polaris are considered to be the finest long-range vessel in the world. From summer bluefin, yellowtail, and wahoo to giant yellowfin tuna, our record is unmatched. The Shogun, under the direction of Captain Rene Montegudo, has become one of the most popular long-range boats in the fleet. This big, wide, solid riding vessel has gained a reputation for catching fish and treating their customers to an epic vacation on the water. I am so proud of Jonathan, Rene, and the crews on both the Royal Polaris and Shogun, as they have helped me keep the reputation of the premier vessels in the long-range fleet. Come see for yourself. Book a trip on the Royal Polaris or Shogun today. Check RoyalPolarisSportFishing.com. or ShogunSportFishing.com or call Monica or Jen in the office at 619-226-8030.
Ford is celebrating our country's 250th anniversary with big savings for you. Employee pricing is back at your local San Diego County Ford dealers. You pay what we pay across the full lineup of Ford trucks and SUVs. We're here for those who build America, those who believe that giving everything we've got today will pay for tomorrow, who will drive America forward for 250 years to come. If that's who you are, you value what we value, and you should pay what we pay. Now get employee pricing across the Ford lineup. Go to your local San Diego County Ford dealer today.
Inside information is everything when it comes to catching fish in Southern California. You need a code group to connect with what's happening on the water. FishDope.com is your code group. Inside information available at your fingertips 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. FishDope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. FishDope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane, along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. They become your code group. You get daily catch reports from Point Conception to San Quintin, 365 days a year. FishDope.com has online planning tools, temperature and chlorophyll charts, hot bite icons, and more. Take it from me, if you don't have FishDope.com, you're not part of the in-the-know crowd. Membership is affordable and good for an entire year. Plus, use the special code and save $30 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Okay, it's time to find out our big winner going fishing on board the Mission Bell. Owen, we're going to flip the prize coin real quick. Do us the honors. Find out if we have a caller or a texter. All right, we have a texter today, and congratulations, John in San Diego. You were the big winner of that trip on board the Mission Bell. John, congratulations. You are going to love fishing on the Bell with Captain Cameron and the boys, doing such a great job.
Congratulations. And Owen, fantastic information. And
this is awesome, dude.
You've already said we were going to suck you right back in. You'll come back with us in October sometime.
Yeah, I'll definitely want to come back and talk to you guys.
All right. Great. Yeah, if somebody wants to contact you, ask some information, share what they've seen on the water, which is important for your research, how do they do that?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. This year especially, if you guys see anything, catch anything weird, because it's going to be potentially an anomaly year if we really get a really warm El Nino, shoot me an email. It's my email is owynsnodgrass@noaa.gov.
Pretty simple. Owen.snodgrass@noaa.gov. gov.
Yep, yep. Or just Google me. I'll be, happy to chat.
Easy to find you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for all your hard work.
Yeah,
thanks
great,
for all
buddy.
You do. We sure appreciate,
my pleasure. I appreciate
everything,
you
your work. And we'll see you on the water.
Hell yeah.
Get hopefully. Out there and go catch a yellowtail.
That's right.
Yeah, let's do it.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. Hey, thank you for listening. Thanks to Adam for all he does on the Let's Talk Hookup app and all the guys over at the Fan too. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 to 9 a.m. Going to be a great show with Captain Rod Butler from Towboat U.S. San Diego. That's going to be a great show. 7 to 9 a.m. We'll see you right back here on the Let's Talk Hookup app, Facebook, YouTube Live, and 97.3 The Fan.